What's up, y'all? This is Julian with The Hub. We are starting a brand new podcast, and we're excited to have our first guest. I will let her introduce herself here shortly, but the name of this podcast is called Roots and Revenue. Our goal is to ensure that we're putting people over profit, and we're talking about the struggles that folks of color have to go through to enter the space of entrepreneurship or business professionalism. So with that said, I am going to go ahead and hand it over to you, Ms. Capers.
Hey, hey, hey. Thanks for having me on the first episode. Yeah. My name is Willette Capers. I am the Assistant Vice Provost for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Augustana University. And I also own my own consulting business where I do DEI consulting, belonging, workplace generations. I do assessment, equity audits, and a lot of other things. Keynote speaking, trainings.
For sure. You can do it all.
Yeah, I do a lot. I do a lot.
So we were talking just a little bit beforehand, and we were talking about, why were you the first guest?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you think you're the first
guest? I have no idea.
Because you do it all. So for those of you who don't know Willette, she is a phenomenal human being.
Oh, thanks, Drew.
We have been friends for quite a while now.
Yes, we have.
And I admire everything that you do. More importantly than that, though, I think you have a value that lends itself to the community without you even trying. Yeah, so that's why I think you are the perfect person to be the first guest, because what we want to talk about is some of those things that we of people of color have to overcome to enter spaces that maybe we are unwelcomed in or feel unwelcomed in some cases. And you and I have had those conversations a lot. So what are some of your experiences?
Man, you know, that's part of the reason why I ended up in Sioux Falls, actually, because in the position that I was in ahead of time, I just did not feel like I can exist as my true and authentic self. Like, it's like they wanted me to wear a mask, and it made the experience horrible. I couldn't, all of the awesomeness that I get to do in my current position, where I get to create, I get to engage, I get to build, I get to, you know, think the unthinkable, and it is welcome. Like, I didn't have that, and it made me, like, doubt myself. It made me doubt my worth. I was just living, you know, I was just living day to day, and I had never been so unhappy. And on top of that, I was having medical issues at the same time. And so that compounded, it's an experience I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy.
For sure.
And so, you know, when the opportunity came to come to Sioux Falls to work at Augie and getting to know, you know, the folks at the institution, the students, the people in this community, and where they was like, just be you, Willette, like, just show up. And I was like, I could be my weird self. I don't have to hide nothing. They was like, no, just be you. And, you know, I remember meeting you. Like, I was only here for 2 weeks. And then I met you. And I was like, oh, man, you and Anchor, y'all like real cool. I was my peeps right here. And then after that Mardi Gras ball, which was like a month later, I was like, oh, these my peeps here. Like, I really can just, like, be myself.
And, sure.
You know, after going through that and learning about myself and what I would never, ever, ever except again, I just know, I know my worth, I know my value, and I get to do it every day.
So I want to come back to knowing your worth. Don't let me forget
okay.
to come back to that. But I want to first maybe open up something that you said before about authentically being yourself. And what I've seen in your work is you intentionally creating a space at your place of employment for those who look like us to also be authentically themselves. How have you, or not how have you, but have you found any type of struggles or pushback from community members when trying to implement such a space?
I mean, there's always gonna be, you know, the naysayers, but I think because I have such a strong presence in knowing what I refuse to accept, like, I'm gonna do it anyway. And I got people that support me. You know, like, I think about, you know, my boss, President Stephanie, always got my back. I think about our chief of staff, Pam Miller, always have my back, has my back. And my students. I think about even my team that I work with, from my student employee to my assistant director. Like, we're a team and we do this together. I want you to be you, so I'm gonna be me. And I think in knowing that I will shut it down in a minute when I feel like someone is not allowing me to be myself authentically. I mean, within a reasonable, you know, space, right?
Yeah.
I call it out, you know? I call it out and I pull them in and I let people know how it's making me feel. I let them know how it impacts not only me or how it might impact the organization or the larger mission, and then we go forward from it. And I let them know, like,
yeah,
I'm not doing it. So again,
how did you find the courage to get to that point? Because that takes a lot of work on yourself.
I think hitting a bottom and knowing what that bottom feels like emotionally, spiritually, and physically, you never want to get there again. And like, anytime I see any elements of it, I just, nope, ain't doing that no more. And I mean, it took a lot. Like, it took years. Like, I was in, you know, my late 30s by the time I got to that. Because I feel like I just used to let people walk over me. I would let people steal my ideas for the sake of not seeming like the angry Black woman or not coming across as a team member and, you know, seeing people get ahead on, you know, my hard work, or, you know, seeing people not value me, or having to go through, you know, years of heartbreak over just me and how I am every day. You find your courage. It was like, I don't need you to give me a seat at the table. You know, I'm gonna bring my own chair. Like, forget you. Or I'm gonna start a whole nother room. You come meet me over here, because this is where the work getting done.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that's the whole premise of the Hub, is we were being invited to seats at certain tables in the entrepreneur community. Mm-hmm. And then when you get invited to those tables, no one listens. Mm-hmm. And you feel like you're just a fly on the wall looking at everybody else, you know? And I know the saying is like, I wish I was a fly on the wall, but when you're a fly on the wall, you don't wish you to fly.
No.
You know what I mean? So we created this space for us. And so I get exactly what you're saying, the intentionality behind creating spaces for us, by us, kind of that FUBU mentality. It's gonna be for us, by us, and all for us. So, all right, so I appreciate that. Excuse me, the other thing is, you have had several of your previous students come back to work for you. How does that feel?
Oh man, it lets me know that, number one, that they value me. They value the experiences that they get with me. You know, trust is very big for me, but not me putting my trust in other people, but people trusting me. So when somebody lets me know that they trust me to help them to grow, to support them, to, you know, hold them accountable, and for them to hold me accountable, it means a lot to me. So anytime that happens, you know, it's that reminder that, okay, I must be doing something right, or that, you know, I'm on the right track.
Yeah, for sure. So that word accountability is big, especially with Black folks. I have seen a lack of accountability in recent years, particularly from Black men. And I'm going to use your word, it's heartbreaking. It's one of those heartbreaking experiences. What would be your advice, not to Black men, but just to Black people in general, about maybe stepping into their own sense of courage to take more accountability, whether it's self-accountability or accountability for the community?
I mean, it's always easier said than done. And while it can be hard when somebody's pulling your coattail or somebody's, you know, telling you or holding you accountable, like, you got to sit back and you got to eat it. Like, you think about it, you resonate on it, you know, ask for examples so that you can better yourself. You know, one of the things that I pride myself in, particularly with my assistant director, is, you know, I tell her, don't hold in. Like, if I do something, or if I, in my leadership over our, you know, department division, if I'm going the wrong way, you got to call me out, because not only do you represent me, I represent you. And so if you holding this, how can I be better for you? And so for me, you know, I like to go back. Granted, I like to go and reflect on things. So I'm going to sit, I'm listening, I'm taking notes. It's going to be in my head for a while, but I want to unpack it and figure out, okay, how can I be better at this? Let's make a plan to go forward. In the beginning, you're going to want to, I don't want to say deny it, but you want to, but if, or, you know what I'm saying, offer it explanation. And so instead of doing that, like, sit back and take time to come in, like, and think about it. If you're having a one-on-one with somebody that you supervise, usually one-on-ones are what, every week, every 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I sit and I think about it, and then we come back from them 2 weeks, all right, here's what I thought about, here's some notes that I've taken so that I can be better. But I'm expecting this of you in turn. It should be a dialogue, not a verbal combat. And so I think that is important for us as people of color, particularly Black people. And how do we appropriately, you know, hold folks accountable and say, hey, as somebody I trust and somebody I want to see, you know, be great, here's some areas where you can continue to grow. And we have to remember, we're not perfect people. Like, there's nothing about us that is perfect. And so, yeah, like, but I want to be, you know, as close to being great as I can be. And so if you're giving me sound advice to help me to do it, then I want to do it.
Yeah. So, man, you dropping gems, because another word I'm going to steal from you is expectations. I think some people think accountability is viewed as like a one-way street, but it's a two-way street. If you have expectations for me, I should also have those same or similar expectations for you as well. With that said, I'm going to dive into, you know, my world of politics. Mm-hmm. I'm going to dive into politics a little bit.
Okay.
Is that okay?
It's all right.
All right. All right. So have you seen recently what President Obama, former President Obama, has called out Black men for their lack of engagement or lack of support behind Kamala Harris? Mm-hmm. All right. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think it's good, and he needs to. It should happen. He did it in a public space, and it's hard to say, okay, well, I want to have a meeting next Thursday with all Black men, yeah, you know, in this city or this city. But I mean, when I think about the support that Black women continuously give to Black men that we don't see in return. Now, we're not doing it for, you know, like a tit for tat. As you know, we want to see our kings thrive, but we don't see it. Sometimes I feel like the Black woman is like the most hated person in society. And when you think about the people that look like you, the people that we as women that we birth, that, you know, and not only like give physical life, but breed emotional and financial and, you know, support spiritually. It hurts when you don't feel like you're getting that back. It's that double standard of, well, I expect this.
Right.
But I want this. So.
So, I'll give you my opinion on it. I also like the fact that he called out Black men. I think, though, there is maybe a lack of will to understand exactly what he was trying to say or what he said. I'm not going to say trying to say, because he's a very good communicator. He's a great communicator. And so what he said was our lack of engagement surrounding political issues, our lack of knowledge surrounding political issues and Kamala Harris, based on our lack of engagement, is present, and we have to do better. Point blank, period.
Exactly.
And that's one man holding others accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as citizens, we have an expectation of what the president should be. And in this case, we had an expectation of what the former president should have been when he was in office. And so a lot of Black men might resent or do resent him for not being Black enough. Have you ever been in a space where you haven't been Black enough, or in a space where you've been too Black?
Oh man, I've definitely been in spaces where I've been too black and told to tone it down. Yeah. Hence, you know, why my dissertation is centered around black women faculty members at ELCA-affiliated institutions. And so there was this one article about, I cannot think of the name of it, but it's like, tone it down, you're too much. I'm like, what is too much? How is me being me too much? And so I think, you know, when you think about that aspect of the former of Barack Obama, it's a understanding in, folks kept saying that he didn't do enough for black people. He didn't do enough for black people. And I was like, well, I felt like I thrived. So, I mean, I didn't, it was hard for me to understand, what do you mean? Like, black people aren't the only ones
right
in our society.
Right.
It's, okay, number one, he needed to dismantle systems of oppression that impact us. Well, if it took 200, 300, 400 years for those systems of oppression to come
right
and impact us, it ain't going to start working in 4 years, in 8 years. Like, it takes time. Like, we're starting to benefit from those systems of oppression now. Like, it's going to take more time for those things that actually start benefiting our life. And I think, you know, we live in an instant gratification society where, you know, somebody can go and sign a check. Well, there's your $1,200. And so they see it. But then now you forgot about the inflation and all of these other things, and you have to pay all of this stuff back, but you were excited.
Right.
Well, this dude, he gave me $1,200, so I will vote for him. But you ain't think about the legislation to fund historically black colleges and to create more avenues for students of color and rural students and low socioeconomic students to enter college. You're not thinking about, you know, you're thinking about you and not thinking about your children and your grandchildren when the policies he was created was to dismantle systems for our children and our grandchildren, and knowing that is better in the long run than $1,200 today.
For sure. Plus, that individual also got rid of the Pell Grant system, or reversed the Pell Grant system, I should say, which it hindered the numbers of folks entering into HBCU. So, listen, that's a whole nother conversation.
I mean, if you look at the people that's not wanting people's student loans to be disbursed, and those same people who are not wanting to do that had their PPP loans.
Forgive me.
Were way more than the, you know, $30,000 that's holding somebody back from buying their first house, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, shoot. Okay, now.
But you know what? I definitely want to add to why I think there's an issue with how people, particularly, I'm going to speak about people of color, to Barack Obama.
We can speak about black folks to Barack
Obama. Yeah. So, Milton Bennett created the intercultural development of sensitivity. And so it's like a continuum. It's like you have people who live in denial when it comes to cultural or conversation. You got people who are in polarization, which can be like polarization reversal or polarization defense. You have people who kind of live in a minimization, and folks who are in minimization, they prefer to live in commonalities or similarities as opposed to differences. You got people who are in acceptance, who, you know, understand and can unpack and understand concepts from accepting and knowing that there are differences that exist in the world. And then you have folks who are in integration that understands, you know, that we have commonalities, we have differences, but how do I navigate across culture or across rooms and spaces to where I don't alienate, but I not only educate, but I also learn from. And so one of the things, and why I think it's hard sometimes for folks like a Barack Obama to come across to people, is because he talks from a level of acceptance and integration.
Yes.
Here's the thing.
Yes.
There's technically only 5% of the people in the world that operate in integration. 15% of folks, maybe in acceptance, maybe, like right on the edge of acceptance. 65% of people are in minimization, and then there's another what, 15% in polarization. And then another, I think, 5% that's in denial. So it's more people on this side of the continuum, to the left of the continuum than to the right. And because he talks and because he, you know, is having these conversations where I just don't think people, I don't want to say haven't been taught, but they're not engaged enough to be able to do that, then they misinterpret and misconstrue, you know, the sage advice he's given. Hence why there's another person whose name it shall not be mentioned, speaks from a system of denial and polarization and elements of minimization. And those little sound bites or these little things that, you know, they speak of resonates because they speak on their level. And it's, you know, it explains so much. Like, I just sit and I look and I'm like, well, you say this person is giving words, Alice. She's speaking, using too many big words. Or this person is speaking like an educated person. This one is not. Why have you aligned yourself
with the other side?
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? Okay, so you just answered your own question about why have you on the podcast first.
Because you set up a foundation like that for the whole season.
Oh, well, thanks.
You know what I mean? So I appreciate it.
I do want to go back real quick, though, because I want to push back on something that you said a little bit. I think I find an agreement with you when you talk about the most hated person in the world being black women. But I do think black men have been stepping up recently.
Oh, I think for sure. I think now that there's a group of thought partners and women who are holding feet to the fire, I think there's a different air that's there. I mean, there's a ways to go, but I think I would definitely say I see a change from, you know, the kids of the 80s and
right
and 90s.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I'm of the 80s now, so hold on now.
Look, I'm Gen X too, so.
No, so yes, I'm starting to see a change as well in black men and the behaviors in black men. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do still have a ways to go, but I think a lot of that is generational trauma. I was talking to a buddy of mine, and he's a little bit older than I am, and he's still of the opposite mindset of saying, yes, I want to treat women this way, but I don't know how. I've never had an example of how to treat a woman outside of my mom who raised me. She was a single mother, but she only told me to do this, 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 and this. She only told me to wash dishes, make sure my clothes are clean, come home, do my homework.
Yeah, because most of them had 8,000 other things to do.
For sure.
And so she just
I'm a dad daddy and disciplinarian and teacher and do all the, and had to go to work and work 2 full-time jobs and do all those things.
But he never had a male figure to teach him how to love a woman, teach him how to treat a woman. And so I think.
And it's part of the generational trauma that you said, it was intended that way.
Absolutely.
I mean, even when you think about, you know, federal money that was given, they would tell the woman she couldn't be married.
Yeah, or they had to physically remove the man from.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. This the only way I'm gonna help you. You can't be married, or you can't.
And only black families.
Yeah, only black families. Like, you can't have this. And so, you know, for somebody to thrive, to say that can't be a bother.
Right.
There can't be somebody around. That's not to say, you know, I'm not giving it out for the men that didn't still come around and say, look, we gonna make this happen, but.
Yeah.
It was intentional.
It was very intentional.
So, you know, when you think about sisters of oppression, like, they show up interpersonal, intercultural, societal, cultural, institutional, all of these different things, policy-wise. And so it's like a grandfather clock. You know, one gear not working, there's another gear pushing just as short.
But we think that was so long ago, and it really wasn't.
No.
I mean, sure, those policies might have been 2 generations from now, or two generations before us, but the young men who were developed under those policies, they're in their late 30s, early 40s. They're just starting to live their life and figure out who they are, and they still don't know how to treat women, period, but particularly in this case, black women. So we are in our infant stages of figuring out how to support.
I mean, even as a nation, we're a nation in our infancy.
Yeah.
And so to know that there are people, you know, that are still young who were born under these policies, like these are many of the things that they've only known. Hence why I say, you know, and I talk about, you know, the long-term effect of the policies that were implemented by former President Barack Obama, like, it's for our next generations to set us up.
Absolutely.
And to have somebody come and completely wipe that. Now, who knows if we're going to have multiple boy generations of people that look like you and I, right, that are going to continue to struggle, not because of themselves, but because society wants to set them up to do that.
Right, for sure. So here's where I'm going to kind of tie those two conversations in a little bit. And follow me, because this is the way my brain works.
Okay, I want you.
Is, although I agree wholeheartedly with President Obama and the words that he said, I understand why those men felt that way, because they don't know how to support Kamba. They've never seen a black woman in power. They've never been in a position to give power to a black woman, because they don't know how to do that.
So they did it when it was the mama and the grandma. For the most part, you know, the mama that was out here raising them or, you know, helping them to go and follow their dreams, you know, it's intersectionality. Not only do you show up as a woman, so there's the compounded, there's the interest in the, think about the elements that, and the things that happen to people who are just women. Now you add on it being black or, you know, Hispanic or Latinx or Indigenous, Native American, First Nation. When you add these different elements of
life. Not even adding queer to that.
Don't add that. Don't add those socioeconomic economic statuses. Yeah. Don't add that to it. So now you're continuously, and like you can't pick and choose what you leave outside when you walk into a space or when you walk into every single issue that comes along with all of those things comes in when you're dealing with it. And so, you know, you could teach somebody, oh, you're supposed to love your mama, but if you and the homeboys have only seen, oh, you sleep with that girl, but you marry this girl.
Someone else.
Yeah.
For sure.
Or this is what? Feisty. This is ghetto. This is this, but mm-hmm. this is that. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. So those biases,
sure,
those unconscious biases are gonna show up every single time.
So I actually believe that's not an unconscious bias. I think it's very conscious. Number one, because it could be changed, but also number two, because it was consciously developed in our youth. Because we did see mama talking bad about our fathers who may or may not have been there.
Okay.
Or we did see this man coming in and out of the house, right? And then mama going and staying the night with him and leaving me alone. And so there's built up resentment from some of those situations as well, to where young black men didn't want to give their mother any power. And so
that's why therapy is important.
Oh, absolutely.
I believe everybody should go to therapy.
You know, in addition to that, though, is my belief that that's the reason why today's black women are so resilient, is because they had to overcome not just their husbands or the father who is supposed to be in the family, they also had to overcome their sons. Mm-hmm. And so overcoming black men who are supposed to be the most powerful, quote unquote, right, thing in our communities, it created a resilient woman. It creates a more resilient woman. Mm-hmm. So that would be my thought process. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe we got to talk that out a little bit.
Let's unpack that. I mean, I think they both could be, I hate
well,
that
two things can be true.
Can be true. Like, I hate that I have to be resilient. Like, I just want to be.
Absolutely.
Like, once we're in life, when can I just be?
Just be you.
I just want to be, yeah, man.
Yes.
I don't want to have to, you know, think about black girl magic. Like, why does that even have to exist?
Sure.
Yeah. I want to look out my window.
I like that.
Melancholy.
Listen,
and just girl, see the future.
Fills me up.
Yeah, but I wish it wasn't a thing.
Yeah, but if we're supposed to be here for each other, then why not make that a thing to fill the cup of?
Well, yes, that I get, I understand. I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to have to be a thing because I have to make nothing out of something.
Yeah.
Because that's what society keeps trying to give me.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
And I'm going to keep making 2 + 2 = 175, mm-hmm. you know? It might not work out for that person, but it sure gonna work for me, and I'm gonna get it to happen. But I wish it wasn't a thing.
We talked about like the expectations being a two-way street. I think that resiliency has become an expectation of a Black woman. Mm-hmm. What's the expectation of Black men?
It is so funny that you ask this question. So I'm teaching a class at Aggie now called Social Impact Through Hip Hop Culture. And the lesson that we were on last week was Let the Women Get Some. And so we were talking about female MCs. And so we were looking at like Roxanne Shanté. And you remember, I don't know if you remember her song, Independent. We were looking at Queen Latifah, UNITY. I even had them listening to queer female rappers. We talked about sexual freedom. So we talked about Janelle Monáe. And we got off on this topic of, I don't know, that some of the guys in my class were just talking about women being women because we were talking about Lil Kim's first album cover. And classic album. And so we were having a conversation about that album. And I don't know what led us on this, but I ended up splitting up the class between those who identified as, you know, male or having masculinity and those who identify as women, female, femininity. And so it stemmed from, how like women wear clothes or like the lyrics. I was like, you know, well, why would you treat her like this? Well, she said this. I was like, it's a rap. Like, mm-hmm. It's a rap. It's her art. It's her artistry. Yeah. And so, you know, we're having this conversation. And so I had the women to write, what's 10 things that you wish men would do for women? And I had the men write, what's 10 things that you can do to support women, particularly women of color? Because all of the kids in my class are identify as somebody as of color.
Okay, yep.
So they did that. And I mean, it was just, the things that the women were writing was just listen to me, just hear me out. You know, don't judge me, support me. And the guys was like, I mean, they had like these massive lists of all of these things. And finally I was like, these things exist. Like, why have you not been doing this all along?
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, what? I was like, the majority, like 90% of this list. And it was like, well, can we write 20 things? I was like, I'm just asking for 10. And it was a really good class. And we, you know, completely messed up my syllabus for the day, but it really got us, you know, on this conversation and thinking about how women, you know, Roxanne Shanté said, you know, I don't want to be the best female MC. I want to be the best MC, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't want to be the best Black woman doing my job. I just want to be the best.
Yeah, I feel that. For sure. All right, so I was supposed to come back to something. I can't remember. You remember?
Uh-uh.
Oh, Lord.
Look, I am 45.
Then, man, we might have to do a part two on
this. All right, look, let's get it. I'm here for it for sure.
All right, one last question. For the next generation coming after us, what is your advice? Because we started off by talking about some of the struggles entering into the professional world, whether it's education, business, whatever it may be. What would be your advice for someone who is just being introduced to some of these troubles and may feel overwhelmed in the process of trying to navigate their way through this thing?
First, I'm gonna say, don't forget who you are. And don't allow others to as well. If you were bred for it, then you will be successful at it. I would also say, take advantage of every opportunity out there. There's so much that I wish I had done, or taken advantage of when I was younger, but I was afraid to. I was kind of, unfortunately, you know, when we think about Black communities and we think about like households, we're made to be afraid of things. And so for me to leave rural South Carolina and I moved to South Dakota by myself, like everybody was terrified. Like, well, what's going to happen if this happens or this? I was like, there's a phone. I fly all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
You know, I'm a gold member with Delta, baby.
Listen, you always go.
Look, I'll hop on that plane in a minute.
I'm surprised we got you for this.
Look, I almost was here. And so take advantage, you know, especially for, you know, those at college, like study abroad, you know, see the world, learn from experiences, have conversations with people, build relationships, you know, build a relationship with yourself. Get to know your likes and your wants and your must-haves and your, think about those boundaries that you hold steady and hold firm to, and ask questions and fail again, but get up and keep trying and, you know, don't let fear be your guide, because if you do, it'll win every single time and you will accomplish nothing.
Yeah. So I'm going to tie that into something you said earlier, too, when you were talking about making the list, the men making a list in your class. All those things that you just listed off are possible for Black people. And that's what we have to know, that they are possible. Not that they can be done, that we should be doing them. We are in space. We are excellent in every space that we're in. There's no reason why we should think otherwise. So I appreciate you. I appreciate the conversation. Thank you for being the first guest.
Yay, thanks for having me.
For sure. And so we will do a part two. Yes. I got to come back to you because it's just too much knowledge to capture in, you know, 45 minutes or whatever it was. But yeah, thank you again. And thank you all for listening to Roots and Revenue.